Shalom Aleichem, Chevra. We are up to Perek Tes Zayin, Chaim Konievsky, Zeicha Tzadik Brocha, in his Sefer Orchas Yosher. And the topic couldn't be more apropos for this time of year. We are in the midst of Sfiras HaOmer. Today is the 24th day of the Omer. And everyone holds this time of the year Sfiras HaOmer, which means that we are scruffy looking. And we're not listening to music, not making weddings, etc., because we're trying to get in touch and remind ourselves about what it means, kavod for another person, kavod between Talmid and Chachamim. So it couldn't be more apropos that the topic today is kavod chaveroi, honoring one's friend, one's chavrusa, one's colleague. So he says like this, the issues are made because chaveroi. One should be very careful in the honor of one's friend. Kiddush Nan, as we learn in the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, Yehi Kavod Chavercha, Chavav Alecha Keshelcha, that the honor of your friend should be just as precious, special to you as your own, which is obviously an incredible request. It's one thing to consider somebody else's kavod, it's another thing that it should be just as precious as one's own. That's a very strong demand. The Avos Rabbi Nosson, so in the Avos Rabbi Nosson, which is basically Brisos that explain Pirkei Avos, Ketzad, how does that work? Malamed shekishem sheroya es kavodoi, kach yeroya es kavod chaveroi. So I'm not sure the best way to translate this. The literal translation, or maybe we shouldn't start with that. The translation that one might be tempted to say is the same way that you view your own kavod is how you should view someone else's. I'm not sure that that's the pshat, because maybe then it should have said the same way that one wants to receive kavod or something like that. Kishem sharoy es kavod, I wonder if in Avos Rabbi Nosson it really means the same way that one pays attention and one sees, and it's a thing. One's kavod, one's personal kavod, is something that one thinks about and pays attention to. So too, that's the way that a person should look at someone else's kavod. In other words, it's very difficult to be able to rise to the challenge of seeing someone else's kavod the same as one's own, but at least to be able to perceive the concept that just like you see that there's something called kavod by you, so too you should see there's something called kavod by another person. So perhaps that's something that sets us on the right path. But again, I'm not sure if that's the pshat. I was reading else. It could just be. It just means to say that you have to view it in the same way. I'm not sure what it would be adding according to that. But okay. Gosheim Shane Adamaritza. She is shame al kavoida, and just like a person would not want the opposite, that there should be any negativity regarding his kavod, personal kavod, which a very sociable person should never want to say anything negative or impact negatively the kavod of someone else. Ubi brachis, gemar brachis, yarba kavod chavirechem, be very careful about the kavod of your friends. Ubi shil kach, tis l'chayel mabah, and it's so great that the merit for that is that through that one can merit olam haba. Ubi psachim, the gemara psachim inayin liyadei b'chaveri shehu gadol mimenu afilu b'davrecha. How do you know, regarding your friend, that if he's greater than you, even in only one thing, in Torah, chayev l'nhog b'kavod, that you have to give him kavod? And it goes on to explain that. But the point is that Rochaim's quoting it because it goes to show that even if a person who knows one more Mishnah than you, so then he's a greater Talmud Chacham than you. So you owe him kavod because of that. Not just because he's a human being, but because of the kavod HaTorah in addition. Talmud Chachamim shevabavel emdin zeh, mipnei zeh, bikurin zeh el zeh. But the Talmud Chachamim that live in Bavel, they apparently were very good at this, and they stood up for one another. And if Chas V'Shalom, one of them were to pass on, they would rip kriya on one another. So that's, obviously putting some person in a very important light, that a person would view someone else as such an incredible, important Talmud Chacham, that one would stand for them, and also that if they were nifter, that would be like the death of a major Talmud Chacham, and they would rip kriya. Reflects an incredible kavod. Uvi Vamis, famously, Shneim Asar Elef Zugim Talmidim Hayel Rikiva, the way that the Gemara says it in Yevamis, Samach Beis Amid Beis, is that there were 12,000 pairs of students to Rabbi Akiva. And Rav Kahana always asks why the Gemara should say pairs. should have just said he had 24,000 students. Why do you have to say there are 12,000 pairs? We can do the math. So just tell us, you know, maybe we need to learn math. But in any case, so he points out that the stress here seems to be the chavrusas, that because there were 12,000 pairs, the problem was that they weren't relating to each other as the proper pairs, meaning as proper chavrusas towards one another. They didn't give each other proper kavod in terms of their relationship towards one another in Torah, in learning. For whatever reason, the Gemara also points out, Megavas al Antipris, Antipris, how do you pronounce these locations? But they were from Gavas until Antiparis or whatever. That's the location that he had his Talmidim in. And they all died in this time period. Because they didn't covet, give proper covet to one another. And the Medrash Rabbah to Koheles explains a little bit more. It finishes, it completes the story with this. And in the end, Rabbi Akiva raised another seven Talmidim. He stood up and he established another seven Talmidim. Amar Lahem, so he said to them, my original Talmidim only died because their eyes were narrow when it comes to the Torah of one another, that they had Saris Ayin. Saris Ayin means the opposite of Chesed, that if a person is very giving, so then they're looking for opportunities to help and to give. Saris Ayin is that a person is very stingy and doesn't want to give. So they were stingy in their giving of kavod to each other, if it wasn't earned, if it wasn't deserved, if it was, they were very particular, and they withheld the kavod from one another. Temli, to you, Cain, you should not behave in that fashion. Immediately they arose, and they filled the entire Eretz Yisrael with Torah. Why is Rebbe so old? No, they said, Rebbe, what did you marry that you were able to live such a long life? That from my entire lifetime, I never received any honor that was the result of an insult or a denigration of any of my friends, which is a crazy thing. Rukam likes to speak about this a lot, that we even daven for this, certainly according to Rashi's pshat, that in the tefillah that we say when going to the Beis HaMedrash, so we say that we shouldn't make any mistakes, and halacha v'yismachu b'chavirai, and my friends should be happy with me. So the question is, are those two different ideas, or those are the same idea? Is it, number one, that I shouldn't make any mistakes in halacha, and number two, that I should have a simcha, that I should have simcha with my friends? Or is it, as Rashi learns, that I shouldn't make a mistake that would result in my chaverim being happy about my downfall, which is a pretty crazy thing to daven for. You know, hopefully we're on higher madriga than that, but apparently this is a very normal and natural thing, is that people are always looking to get ahead, and there's jealousy, etc., etc. So Rabbi Chumana kind of said that this feeling never existed by him, and that's why he earned his long life and deserved long life, is because he never gained any kavod that was a result of anybody else's downfall. And the Mechilta points out that when at the end of Parashas Yisroi, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says after Har Sinai that Rak Mizbeach Adamat Haseli, you're going to make a Mizbeach for me, but it should not have steps. It should have a ramp. Why? Because if a person is walking up steps, so he has to spread his legs as he walks up the steps, and that could result in one's erva becoming visible. Who cares if the steps see a person's erva? What is that supposed to mean? How much more so? When it comes to stones, the steps that have no intellect, they have no understanding. You shouldn't relate to inanimate objects in a way that is with denigration, that you should treat them that way. Your chaver, who's in the image of the one that spoke in the world, came into being. Dinhu, kal v'chaymer, much more so, shal tinag boy minag bizayon, that you shouldn't relate to such a person in a way that is denigrating. If inanimate objects, we have to be sensitive towards in that sense, that we have to be aware of what we're doing. Kal v'chaymer, we have to be aware and sensitive to people that actually have feelings. But avos, again, in Pirkei Avos, yichavet talmid chachavet v'lechet kishalcha, that the kavod of your Talmud, Your student should be as precious to you as your own. And the kavod for your friend should be like the fear you have of the awe you have of your Rebbe. Of Yerushalmi, when Yisro came to visit Moshe Rabbeinu after everything had happened and he came to join Klal Yisrael, that you see from here, from the way that the pasuk presents itself, is that by giving a proper kavod to another person, meaning that you receive him with honor, giving proper kavod, it's as if one has received the Pnei Shechina. And you see how much people were careful about kavod for their friends. And the Gemara of Messiah Lama Gimel says, there was an incident where Rav Chista, who was a student of Rav Huna, so the student of Chista, so he said to his Rabbi, to Rav Huna, tell me, b'tzarech l'rabbi mai. We know that from Mishnayos, that if you have a Rebbe and a father, and one of them, they both lose, like an aveda, a lost object, other scenarios. So there's, so the Gemara says that precedence goes to the Rebbe before precedence goes to a father. So he asked a question and he said, this is what Rav Chista's Kasha Rav Huna, so he said, Yilam Deinu Rabbeinu, what if you have a situation where there's a Talmud and he's been learning by, let's say, other Rabbeinu. So now he goes back to his main Rebbe. And the main Rebbe now needs the Talmud to tell him what these other Gedolim, these other Talmidei Chachamim said. So on the one hand, he's a Talmud. On the other hand, he's a shtickle Rebbe to the Rebbe. So what's the halacha in terms of Hashavas Aveda and those types of categories when we're stacking up father in physical sense versus father in ruchniyistika sense? When you have a Talmud, that's a shtickle Rebbe to his Rebbe. So does he still have to be meshiv the Aveda to his Rebbe? Or the Rebbe takes on like a lower standard now because the Rebbe is not so a full-fledged Rebbe anymore because now he's a shtickle Rebbe to his Rebbe. So that was the kasha, that was the shaila that Rav Chista asked Rav Huna. Rav Huna apparently misunderstood. Amar Lein said to him, Chista, Chista, leitza richnalach. What? Chista, I don't need you. You need me. In other words, that's not our relationship. Apparently, Rav Huna thought that Rav Chista was referring to their relationship when he asked this question. And Yosef Rav Chista, Arboin, Tanisa Mishum, Dechalish Taiti Rav Huna. Rav Chista decided that he needed to fast for 40 days because of this pain, this mental pain, emotional pain that he caused Rav Huna, Shesavar Shemechavin Lov, who thought that he was talking about their relationship. And Yosef Rav Huna Arboin Tanisa Mishum Dechashta Rav Chista. And Rav Huna also fasted for 40 days because of the fact that he suspected Rav Chista of this type of, chutzpah, Shiva. Harisana Arboin Tanisa Mishum Shagarm Lechalisha Satas Tos. So you see that Rav Chista fasted for 40 days because he caused this weakness, this mental weakness, this emotional stress, even though it was an error. But because it's his Rebbe, so he fasted. That's how upset he was that it was a pagam, that he hurt the covet of his Rebbe. So interesting, the sources that Rav Chaim has. So there's apparently some sort of thing called Meseches Chibut HaKever. Chibut HaKever has to do with punishments after death. So I don't know what this is, but in the notes on the banner, so they say it's quoted in a collection of Midrashim called Oitzar Midrashim, page 93. So okay, Rav Chaim Zbiki, as he quotes from Chibut HaKever, Perek Dalid, Bisha Adam Niftar Min Olam, the person at a time when a person dies, Shalin, so they ask him, Himlachta is Chavercha Benachas Ruach, did you crown your friends with pleasantness? In other words, it's like Himlachta is like you treat them like a melech. Did you treat your friends like a melech? Meaning that you always related to them with a sweetness, with Nachas Ruach, it's the best way to translate nachas ruach, with a relaxed way of speaking to them. Im yesh ba dvarim halalu, if you have these types of qualities, yoytzes neshasa b'leitzar, so then the person's neshama, when it leaves the body, will leave the body without any pain. Wow. Matzina b'levi, where it tells us about Levi, shebishvil shalei nechnas li yeshivas asher Rabbi Afis v'achlish l'dayte, because he didn't go into the yeshiva of Rabbi Afis, and he caused this distress to Rabbi Afis because of that, he wasn't allowed into the Beis Medrash after he died until Shmuel davened for him that he should be able to get in. Everybody knows that if a person gives kavod to others, so then others give him kavod reflexively. And to the exact opposite, and if a person is not giving kavod to others, so then people don't give him, they denigrate him. Okay, this not as we learn in the Mishnah, in Pirkei Avos, the fourth parak, which by the way happens to be the parak coming up the Shabbos, Eizu Mechubad, who is a person that actually is deserving of kavod or gets kavod, a mechabed es aprios, one who is mechabed all the creations. Shamatim Yigun Tzadik Rav Tzvi Kopshitz, that's Zal. I heard from this person named Rav Tzvi Kopshitz, Ala Mishnah Shama Pshat in this Mishnah. Ben Zayma Eimer, when Ben Zayma says Eizu Chacham, who is a wise person, Allah may make all of them one who learns from everyone. He's a gibor who is considered to be mighty. It's one who conquers his inclination. Ezehu Ashir, who is considered wealthy. Hasameach Mechalka, one who's happy with what he has. Ezehu Mechubad, who is honored. Hamechabed Esabrios, one who honors all the creations. And he said, the Mishnah gives you, it lists, it considers here four different things. Hefech, which are the opposite of what the world thinks. Because the world thinks, Miza Chacham, who is a wise person, Shukulan Boy, Nishallah, everyone who comes to ask him, Shailas. He doesn't have to ask anyone else. It's exactly the opposite. Ezehu Chacham, who's really a wise person, Halay Mimi Kol Adam, one who learns from everyone else. Who's considered to be a mighty person, a gibor, a person that's the mightiest. He's able to conquer everybody else. Nobody can push him around. It's the opposite. When he's able to conquer his inclination, give in to everybody else. He's really in control. The world thinks, Mizasha who's rich, Misha Terech, Kolyama, a person spends his entire life, less of a harvest kesef, collecting money. Gomra Mishnah, Asha, who have the exact opposite. Ezu Asher, Asamech Bechelka, one who's happy with what he has. Ba'alam Chayshman Shemi, who is a person that's really honored? Misha Kolmechabdin, I say, one who everybody honors. Who in Mechabid La'afechad, and he doesn't have to honor anybody else. It's the opposite. Who's really honored? And is one who honors everybody else. Help us to be careful in the kavod of our friends. Story time. The Sandig at Ruchaim Kanievsky's bris, his own Sandig, was his father, the Stipler Goyim. Were there no other important and illustrious guests who could have been honored with that role? Is a very strange thing. How often does it happen that a father is the Sandig for his own son? Certainly there were, but the Stipler was so careful in the area of Beinonim L'chaveroi, and especially with regard to the honor of Talmid Chachamim, that he hesitated to honor one of those present with the role of Sandik above all the others, because he has to pick one person, and it's going to be an insult to all of the others. As Rechaim tells it, my father was my Sandik. There were several Talmid Chachamim at the Bris who could have been honored with that role, among them Baruch Epstein, author of the Torah Tamima, the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, the son-in-law of the Rav of Pinsk. Therefore, in order to serve, to avoid insulting anyone, my father undertook to serve as the Sandik himself. At this point, Ruchaim added, Baruch Epstein was our neighbor in Pinsk, and I remember him. He was a great Talmud Chacham, and the critical things they say about him are not true. I heard that during the Holocaust, every German who approached him with the intent to kill him died on the spot. In the end, he passed away on his own. The Rav of a community somewhere in Eretz Yisrael came to Ruchaim's mother, who was running a home for refugees at the time, and asked her to look for a shidduch for a certain bacher who had come to the country from Vilna. She tried with one girl, then with another, but every idea was foiled in some way. She made no progress. After several failed attempts, the bacher told her, I know the reason why no one is managing to find me a shidduch. And what's that? She asked. Back in Vilna, I became engaged to a local girl, he confessed. Afterwards, I found out that the kala had periods in which her mind is not so clear. I went to the Gadol Hador, Ruchaim Zagrzynski, and asked him if I could break the shidduch. His answer was, wait until after you marry her. Afterwards, you can divorce her. Well, I obeyed the Gadol Hador literally. On the day after the wedding, I gave my wife a get. In actuality, Ruchaim Oizer's intention was for the bacher in time to be accustomed to his wife's condition and accept the reality. And he did not mean for him to do such a thing to an unfortunate Jewish girl, to marry her with the intention of divorcing her immediately without her advanced knowledge. That young man never merited to be married. Here we see how powerful an influence is exerted by hurting another person. I'll tell another story linked to this topic in connection to the idea that is decreed where each person's burial place will be. In the Maharam Banat's final days, he was asked to attend a gathering in a distant city. He was very old. He was very weak. At first, he refused on the grounds of weakness. However, after much pleading, he gave in and attended the meeting. While still in that city, the Maharam Banat was nifter. It was an Erev Shabbos, and there wasn't enough time to take him to be buried in his own city. So with no other choice, he was laid to rest in the local cemetery. The people in his home city were very distressed. It was important to them that their esteemed Rav be buried in their own cemetery. However, removing a body from its burial place and transferring it to another location poses a halachic difficulty. The people of his town sent the Shaila to the Chassam Sofer and waited for his answer. The Chassam Sofer ruled that the transfer was permissible. He composed a detailed responsum and explained it clearly. However, when he finished writing the letter, ink spilled all over the page. Could this be a hint from above, he wondered. In doubt, he refrained from rewriting the letter. 3 months later, the Maharam Banat appeared at the Chassam Sofer in a dream. I told him, in my youth, I was engaged to a girl for 3 months, after which I broke the shidduch. Because the girl was not sufficiently appeased, it was decreed that I would be buried beside her for 3 months. That's why matters evolved in such a way. Heaven brought me to a distant city in order that I should be buried there, and heaven prevented you from sending your permission to the people of my city. Now the decreed time has passed. I have come to request that you permit having me brought to my city. On the heels of the dream, the Chassam Sofer hastened to send the townspeople his responsum, beginning with the story he had just been told. Wild, no? Reb Chaim's son-in-law, Reb Braverman, related that he had the merit of learning with Reb Chaim for many years. During that period, Reb Chaim did not yet have regular hours for admitting the public. People would sometimes arrive while they were learning, wishing to speak alone with him. Reb Chaim did not permit his chavrusa to leave the room to be alone. Rather, he himself would go out to the visitor. Once, a very illustrious Rosh Yeshiva arrived. On that occasion, Reb Chaim did ask his chavrusa if he would mind leaving the room. Reb Braverman also said that when Reb Chaim's new sefer and the Yerushalmi arrived, Reb Chaim would ask his permission to distribute a few of the sfarim. That was his private covet for his chavrusa, even a relative. Reb Chaim's grandson, Reb Gedalia Honigsberg, told me and my brothers that in his childhood, he once wanted to ask Reb Chaim a question before Ma'ariv and Motzei Shabbos, but someone pushed forward to ask his own question first. Reb Gedalia went away. After Ma'ariv, as he stood with a group of friends, he felt a tap on his shoulder. To his shock, there stood Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who inquired, "What did you want to ask?" It takes a special person to recognize and to realize it, and not the person should never feel hurt. Once, when reciting Birkas HaMazon at his table, Reb Chaim stood up and handed a bencher to one of the Bachrim who had dined with him. Afterwards, someone asked him, "Is Rabbeinu so scrupulous that people should bench from a bencher?" Yeah, he got up and he handed him a bencher, like, "Here, bench from a bencher." Replied Reb Chaim, "No, I saw that he gave out benchers to everyone but him. I was afraid he would feel insulted, so I got up and gave him one." Reb Chaim once needed my help with something. When I saw that he was waiting and not needing my help, I asked him why. Reb Chaim said, "Your children are here in the room. I'm waiting for them to leave. It's not derech eretz for them to see their father providing me with a service." Yes, it is, right? A photographer once came to take pictures of Reb Chaim baking matzahs. One of those in charge became furious with the photographer for disturbing them. Reb Chaim went over to the photographer and said, "Don't be alarmed by the shouting. Sometimes people get too angry." On another occasion, he repeated Shmona Esrei. He explained that someone had poured out all his troubles to him before davening, which made him feel that he could not concentrate fully during Shmona Esrei. Therefore, he went back and recited it again. I'm not exactly sure what that story is doing here. As the dishes were being cleared from the table after the Shabbos Suda, the man doing the clearing hurried through the job and accidentally spilled a drink on the table. Reb Chaim, noticing this and wishing to help the fellow in that embarrassing moment, told him, "It says in Erev Pesach that they would hang up the toda loaves as a sign that the time had come to burn the chametz." Right? And Mishnah says that when they wanted to tell people what the zman was in terms of you can't eat chametz, you have to destroy your chametz, they did it with a simon on this in the high place in the Beis HaMikdash, everyone would be able to see. Why did they hang up the loaves? They're not allowed to just let something become pasul, right? Didn't they have to eat them? So on Daf Yigimel, the Gemara answers that the bread was disqualified. It was they couldn't eat it anymore because blood had spilled on it. The question is raised, how did the blood spill? The answer is that in his haste to do the mitzvah, the Kohen spilled the blood. Yes, I would say, you know, these things happen even to Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash. In a similar situation, Chaim said with a smile, it says, "Aaron did so," with regard to lighting the menorah. Rashi explains the verses relating to the praise of Aaron, who did not change what he was told to do. Why would he change anything? Hasidim say that this means by nature, Aaron could have been very quick and energetic in carrying out the mitzvah and accidentally spill the oil from the cups. Therefore, he was praised for not changing anything. Rechaim related, I remember the story that happened when Avram, who was my classmate in Tiferes Tzion, became engaged. The Chazon Ish wished to participate in the Tanoim and asked to be informed when it would take place. But when they arrived to invite him to join, it's taking place, he was sitting with an elderly couple who had come to ask his advice about all sorts of details regarding threads, needles, buttons, and the like. They sat with him for a long time. Only when he had finished advising them did he get up and go to the Tanoim. Afterwards, he said that the couple were Holocaust survivors whom he had advised to open a shop of sewing notions. They took his advice and came to consult with him about which merchandise to buy. And there was no question of causing inconvenience to those who were at the Tanoim awaiting his arrival, since everyone was obligated to help this couple. And that is all for today.